bloody a major sausage that is. Look at the state of it.
This is the Bulls podcast, folks. We have a special guest on the pod this week. I'm the Doc. Bezo is on the ones and twos this week. He's not on the pod, but we have Burning TB.
Hello. Sorry, motoring. Did I jump in too soon?
No, that's cool. Writer, thinker, radio appearer, honorer. I understand you were on the on ABC Newcastle today. Was that the case, or did you get bumped?
No, it was this morning for a grand total of about 45 seconds.
Oh, you just went on and said, street race bad, track real narrow. Was that basically the gist of the take that you had to offer?
Yeah, good idea, poor execution.
Yeah, that's basically the story of the Bulls podcast, as near as I can tell. So the backstory to this one, folks, and we might as well get into this as our first point of discussion point. The V8 supercars, or just the supercars as they're now known, you can't call them V8 anymore, otherwise you'll be forcibly re-educated by James Warburton at some point, I expect.
God, wouldn't that be boring?
Oh, God, he'd just call you un-Australian and be oily at you. It'd be deeply depressing. So they've moved their big finale final round from a terrible track, basically laid out with a set square around Olympic Park in Sydney at vast taxpayer expense, to a track around the Newcastle, the headland just to the east of Newcastle City at vast taxpayer expense. And being an Overcastrian, I understand, as you are, Bernie, this is the sort of idea that would have seemed brilliant to, I imagine, sort of 8-year-old Bernie, but somehow not quite as clever when you actually have to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah, basically. 8-year-old me actually did have this track drawn out as something that would be really cool.
I kind of thought you would have.
Shit, I did that. It might have been 10, but anyway.
Maybe they ripped off your old drawings.
Well, maybe they, yeah. If James Warburton's been rustling around my parents' place, we're going to have words.
Yeah.
Don't look in the third cupboard, James.
No. That stuff's mine.
That's where the bad things are.
That stuff's vintage now. You know, you can probably get a lot for that on eBay. But so they've laid this track out around Newey. I know Newey a bit because my brother went to uni there, and he lived in the old, it was like a rundown ghetto block of apartments that used to be the nurses' quarters there on, I think it was New Common Street. So it's kind of in the middle of that precinct where they're planning to run this racetrack. But I had a look at it on Google Maps, and it doesn't matter what track route they take, it's going to be narrow as fuck. It really is going to be awkward.
It's going to be horrendous. Like, it's one of those things where you can see that they've learned nothing from the previous street races that didn't work, like Canberra.
Well, Canberra was the first thing I thought of. Because you might remember Canberra. There was a street track around Old Parliament House back in the late 90s, early aughts, for international listeners. And it had this fantastic long bending sweeper that looked fantastic on paper around the edge of Parliament Circuit or whatever they call that bit. Problem was it was two traffic lanes wide. So it was really just trying not to hit the wall, knock your wing mirrors off on either side as you went around this corner. And the other problem was that the crowning in the road was such that it looked like the fucking Rally of Finland as they went sweeping from Canberra to Canberra around the front of Parliament House. So it looked pretty and was completely unraceable, which I would have thought they would have learnt their lesson by now on that one.
My favourite bit of that track was the first corner, which the whole field just couldn't get around at the start of every race that they had there. They just all piled into each other and blocked the road.
It was like that hairpin at Macau where Tom Walkinshaw once had to send someone with a tape measure to find out whether he'd be able to get around it without doing a three-point turn. He was taking the old Jaguars in those days. But the thing is that it's going to look fucking tremendous.
Yes.
They've got the track laid out.
Yeah. I really believe that their rationale for this circuit was, what is the thing that is going to look phenomenal on television?
Because that's the thing about Newcastle, isn't it? Is that people forget that it has got fantastic coastal vistas.
It does. The track runs near King Edward Park, which is just, you can just see for miles down the coast. It's fantastic. They used to run a hill climb there until last year, I think, was the last one.
Oh, yeah, because they ran it in the 70s, and then I don't know if it went to bed for a while and came back, but
they used to start right down near Newcastle Beach and run along right along the coast, along the edge of a cliff, and then up into the park. And they did it in like the '50s, like Jack Brabham's race there, or bullshit like that. Like the list of people that did it back
in Tirana there once, I think, or something. I remember
the list of people that sort of did it in the '60s and seventies and early '80s is incredible. And they used to do that, and they did that up until somewhere in the early aughts, and then a massive boulder fell off the cliff and blocked the road, so they had to shorten the track a little bit.
Well, it would make a fantastic time attack venue, but that might be about it. So it'd be interesting to see the problem is, in order to make it raceable, they're going to have to pull up footpath and run roads through. I mean, some of the parkland.
Well, I don't even know where they're going to be able to do this, because the road reserves there, like, there's not much footpath to be able to pull up. So you've got, I don't know, 2.5 lanes of traffic, maybe.
Particularly along the beach road there.
Especially along there where it gets quite narrow. So you can't really rip that up. So you're going to have to put your concrete barriers inside the gutter for a start, which is going to take another foot or so out of the road width. And like the ability for cars to get side by side and even contemplate an overtake is not there.
Well, you're not going to be able to get around somebody who's fenced it. It's going to be red flag central. Unless they can run a little curb and make the footpath part of the racing surface, which would be quite interesting in kind of an old Nürburgring kind of way. Instead of the
I believe they do that in some parts of the Homebush circuit. There are some bits where they've just laid down some concrete on the inside of the corner so the cars can basically hop up over the over what would be normally the gutter.
Yeah, just have some nice apex, yeah. So that's an interesting idea that's probably not going to come to fruition in any kind of effective way.
Yeah. And we haven't even mentioned the other problems, like all the coastal parkland they're going to dig up to turn into racetrack.
And the fact that it's fairly flat real estate, is it not?
Well, no, but they're basically, what's going to end up is an entire suburb is going to be encased within the circuit.
Yes.
So this isn't like Bathurst, where over the years all the houses that are on Mount Panorama have all built basically back roads into all the houses on Mount Panorama, so they can get in and out when there's race meetings on. This is an entire suburb that's going to be inside a racetrack.
This looks like they should spin it off as a parallel reality TV show. Just see just follow the residents around for the race weekend and watch how insane they get, and they start, you know.
Just watching they get redder and nuder.
Just red and nude on the hill.
Red and nude on the red line. There we go.
Oh, concept. Spin that one off to Fremantle Media or someone. The Endemol people. So we might as well start with V8 supercars. It was it was the year of Shane Van Gisbergen. Winning all of the things and then all of the other things. And then I think we discovered that he's only failed to win one championship he entered this year. And that was
one was that?
That was the probably entirely made up Intercontinental GT Challenge, which was
the SRO thing.
Yeah, it was a three-hander made up of the Bathurst 12-hour, which he won, Spa 24-hour, which he was leading at halfway, and then the car packed up, and this Sepang 12-hours, which was, you know, the less said about the better in terms of what he got up to. But this is the first year he's actually had a proper factory car in touring cars. And he fuck-annihilated everybody effectively. And it makes you wonder, is he going to be, even in a series that's got so much parity, are we looking at a guy who might be able to go and ratchet up Brocky-style numbers?
I don't know, really. He's certainly got the talent to be able to do it. Like the bloke is just unbelievable behind the wheel of a car. But having said that, there's something about him that just sort of niggles at the back of my mind, and I think a lot of it's got to do with how much racing he actually does. Like every weekend, this bloke's flying all around the world to go racing. You got to remind me of those NASCAR blokes who just stay fit.
Well, it reminds me of Mario by racing. Back in the day, because he would literally be racing something every weekend, and Tony Stewart was like this too.
That's what I had in mind. Except SVG's arguably less insane than
he certainly hasn't killed anyone with a sprint car recently. allegedly. disproven. hashtag not asterisk convicted. Don't sue. Well, the thing about the extracurricular stuff is that you could argue, well, it shows that he could easily get distracted and end up running. I mean, he's probably got the talent to run GTs in Europe full time. I mean, probably, you know, GTLM. They were desperate to, you know, if they had the money and if he had the inclination, they would have signed him anyway. So it's kind of an argument whether, okay, all this other extracurricular stuff is distracting him and he won't keep his eye on the game, or whether it's actually going to prolong his V8 supercar career, because the things that might pull him away are not, he can have enough of them just to whet his appetite and still concentrate on the main game at home.
Yeah, I think it's really going to depend on whether he gets bored with the V8s, which
yeah.
is a thing that can happen really easily, especially when you look at how the series has changed over the years, and there have been periods where it has just been phenomenally dull.
Exactly. I mean, Jamie, Wincup won 6 titles, so it wasn't that
bad. Yeah, you know, woo!
Well,
great television.
You wonder about a bloke called like Two Girls, is that he must think that he's of similar talent to Van Gisbergen, and no one's ever remotely come near offering him anything interesting. So I wonder how long it'll be before. I have to say that he did a much better job than our friend Lewis Hamilton of not spitting the dummy when your teammate beats you to the championship. He did a, which is part of the Two Girls story, is that he doesn't seem to have any vestiges of a personality that makes him arc up, which is why it's so ironic that we call him Two Girls Wincup, which is probably the most obnoxious and offensive thing you can think of. But you'd think that he must be sitting there thinking, hell, even Loudon's got a shit year in Formula 3000 where he got his ass kicked. Why doesn't anybody come and ask me to do anything cool?
Well, I wonder if he's interested, or he's just quite happy to take his paychecks from Triple Eight and just dawdle around at the front of the V8 Supercar field every, you know, for 16 weekends a year or whatever it is.
Possible. I mean, I don't think he's even had a 12-hour run.
No, and he's not in the field for next year's race either. So, and a heap of supercar guys are in the field for next year's race.
Well, once they started being part of the promotion, it suddenly went from no, we'll run our pathetic little super test up against the event to no, let's encourage as many of these people to get in it as possible.
I'll be interested to see if it happens. Bringing in all the supercar drivers into the GT3 space. Whether we start seeing more of them going off and doing things like Highlands or going over to Europe and doing the Blanc Pan, or I think SVG is doing the IMSA GT series.
Came about was that the first bit of extracurricular stuff he ever did in sports cars was he was running for this WeatherTech team for the Daytona 24 Hours, and they were a Porsche team, and they've just switched to AMG Mercedes with the new AMG Mercedes GT. So he signed up to do 3 of the 4 endurance races in IMSA, which is the Daytona, Sebring, and I think Watkins Glen is the other one he's going to do. I think there's a clash for the 4th one just at the end of the year.
Yeah, Petit Le Mans clashes
Petit
with...
Petit Le Mans, yeah.
Sandown,
I think, yeah. It'll be Sandown or Bathurst.
One of those. They're all at the same end of the year.
Yeah, they're all at that pointy end. And he's going to, instead of running, I think there was an amicable parting of the ways with McLaren, because he was a McLaren driver, but they, you know, there was too many clashes for the Europe thing.
Yeah.
So he's actually going to be running a Merc in the Bathurst 12-hour, and he's going to be running it with a team called Scotty Taylor Motorsport. Now, Scotty Taylor Motorsport, this is more for the edification of the listener, Bernie, as I'm sure you're aware of this. Scotty Taylor Motorsport has been running a Mercedes in the Australia GTs for a little while. They've been run by a little team called Erebus. Now, SVG and Erebus have a little bit of history that goes back. Are you aware of this history, Mr. Bernie?
I was. It's one of those things. It's right on the tip of my tongue, but I cannot articulate what it was now.
This is the thing where when Benny Klemenko took over Ross Stone's race team, Shane Van Gisbergen fake retired to get out of his contract and then went and raced for a 888 satellite team.
Oh, that's right. He did too. And
as recently as this year, after Shane won the title, Benny Klemenko came out and absolutely ripped into him and saying that the only reason he didn't come and race for her was because she was a woman.
That's right. And Van Gisbergen's response was, no, I didn't want to race for you because I didn't like the way the team would be run, which, judging how the team was run, from where I'm sitting, seems like a fair enough assessment. Well,
his argument was that he said in the interview, and the thing is that he never at any point said it was about Betty. It was about, and I've got a lot of respect for Betty and the way that she runs her operation.
Oh, yeah. Now,
a self-starter, hell of a self-starter. But the problem was that Van Gisbergen's point was always, AMG are just building the cars and sending them out. They're not sending people. This is not a two-way, it's purely a customer operation. Whereas the other operations that were running, like Nissan's, were much more interactive. And he said, look, this is not going to go. And you'd have to say it turned out right. I mean, those two AMG Mercedes are sitting under dust covers in a shed. I saw Betty tweeted a photo with them a couple of weeks ago. Still sitting there, still looking for something to do. So I think he was right on that one.
Maybe we'll see them running around in the Dunlop series in a couple of years.
Yeah, that'd be funny. I mean, I guess they have to be eligible. They're Car of the Future 1, I suppose. First generation. Second generation. What are they up to? Generation 3?
Yeah, where are we going next year? Gen it's called Gen 2, but it's like the third Car of the Future tomorrow.
I thought it was Gen 3. I've got no idea.
I could look it up on the computer that's right in front of me, but I'm not going to.
It's not important enough. The other big story, of course, this year in the Vert Supercars was Tom Walkinshaw's boy got fired. So after 26 years of running the factory Holden team, the organisation that Tom Walkinshaw set up and wasn't owning for the whole period, it has to be said, had its factory status taken off it by Holden, who are going to hand it across to Triple Eight, which makes perfect sense in terms of performance, but there was a lot of people who reacted to it, let's say, in a way that was perhaps a little bit irrational, perhaps. People tweeting abuse at the marketing manager from Holden, I thought were quite funny. Dear. You fucking dog, I'm going to fucking support fucking and IJT. Basically, Collingwood supporters, when they become V8 Supercar fans, don't quite get the lie of the land.
It is a little bit sad given the history. I like Triple Eight. I like the way they go about their racing. They're, you know, and the fact that they're doing really well. Like, they had the top three positions were all Triple Eight cars this year. Like, they're doing something right, obviously. But I don't know. It'd be like if Brad Jones got booted out of the sport. You know, there's this little plucky little. They're plucky little now, but you know, there was a time when the Walkinshaw HRT team was really dominant. But
I mean, it's kind of the thing they kind of earn it through performance, and they just perform. And I've always been up, you know, there's HRT shirts in my wardrobe. I'm always a big HRT fan, but they just couldn't get their shit together in a way that, and it was very, very obvious in public that they couldn't get their shit together. Because they had being compared to a benchmark they couldn't meet, and the problem is, I think that, I mean, Brian Walkinshaw is not a race team manager, and I'm not sure he knows what he's doing, and I think that might be an insurmountable issue.
Yeah, I look forward to it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Walkinshaw squad next year. What they're going to do, whether it's going to be a real kick in the teeth and we'll just see them sort of slide off the face of the earth, or you never know, they might actually get their shit together.
Well, it could
be the kick up the arse that they need.
Depends on the track layout too. I mean, they'll be running the same equipment as all the other Holden teams. It'll just be a matter of them being, and they've always been well sponsored and they've always been well presented, and their racecraft's usually pretty good, and they hire good race drivers. So they'll be there. One of the problems was, I think, it might actually be helpful for them to have less engineering input, in that they're going to end up, I mean, all the, as I understand the way it's going to work, all the basic parts are going to be built by Triple Eight and sold to all the Holden teams. And then you do your own engineering on the back of that, whether you're Brad Jones or whether you're, you know, whoever else. So maybe taking away some of that variability means that they're going to have a more stable and competitive car. It's been very obvious that they're very good on certain sorts of tracks, like Homebush and Townsville, the street circuits, where you don't have these long sweeping corners. You've got a very short turn and powered down and braking is more important than having, you know, good mechanical compliance and grip through a fast sweeper like at Bathurst.
Yeah.
Maybe some of that stuff will kind of be bred out by having, you know, a bit more sameness with the mechanical package. The other big thing that's coming in is that Simona Di Silvestro is going to be running a Nissan, which is next year, which is cool in theory, but the problem is I think the Nissans aren't greatly, they're not so super competitive. I mean, the guys that are pedaling them, apart from the Kelly brothers, who might be a little bit past it, are not Muppets, and they've not really been threatening the sort of the 888 Pro drives. So my fear for Simona is that she might be...
She's going to be stuck down the back of the field.
Well, she'll be kind of... I mean, she's probably the most... On paper, they've got the best CV of any... You know, certainly in terms of the experience base she's got. One of the best CVs on the grid. The problem is going to be that it might only be good for mid-table. And then, of course, you know, she's going to... She and V8 supercars are going to cop it for the thing being a publicity stunt, where a little bit like Danica in NASCAR. I mean, Danica's a very talented driver, but you can very easily be in mid-table relevance in NASCAR because there's just so many of the fucking things. And you end up looking like, unfortunately, a kind of an ornament when that's not really what that doesn't reflect on your actual skill base.
Yeah, it's there's a lot in supercars that's going to be interesting next year, and Simona's certainly there as well. You're right about the Nissan, like it's not even the second tier, sort of in that top of the midfield quickest car sort of thing. It's sort of sits, you know, 15th, 16th. Yeah. You know, if the Kellys aren't throwing it off the road, they might snag a 10th.
Yeah, and you know, if things go well, you know, on a day when things are going well, like Darwin, I think Michael Caruso got a win. It can come right, but that's just the variability of the sport. Is that, you know, some week you're fifth, some weeks you're 25th. One of the problems is I think just the Kelly team are not as good at running a V8 supercar on a consistent basis as 888 and Pro Drive, and that's fair enough. I mean, Dick Johnson, Team Penske aren't there yet. They will be there because Roger Penske will pour money into it until it is. But if you're only 5% off, then you're going to be, you know, down the road.
That's you mentioned Roger Penske. Just reminded me of all the every time they tried to interview him at Bathurst, and he just had
no idea
where he was, what was going on, why he was there, and who this person was that was trying to talk to him. There was even a moment where I'm pretty sure he didn't know who Dick Johnson was.
Yeah. Dick looks awful. He just looks so sad. He looks like he's been, to use the verbiage of the alt-right, he looks like he's been cooked. He really does look like he's he's had a man come in and you know, Chuck come Johnson. Into his house and take, because the saddest thing is that, you know, people will come in, you know, it's very obvious when you see that, like when Roger's in town and Dick's in the garage, Roger never speaks to Dick. And Dick is just standing in the corner, just looking sullen. It's so sad. But that's what happens. I mean, the team was flat broke. But one I really don't have time for is Ryan Story, that kind of weird, pasty vampire dude. Who's their team manager.
He's good value.
There was some obtuse thing that I saw on, what is it, what's that show? The V8 footy show, whatever they call it. Inside Supercars?
The one I've never watched.
Yeah, I watched it because Crompton and Story was sniggering away about something about politics. And it was in a way, it was kind of like, oh, well, you know, congratulations on the politics stuff. And it was like, and they were kind of sniggering at each other like a pair of private schoolboys. And I did a bit of Googling. It turns out Ryan Story is a senior strategist for the Victorian Liberal Party. And after that, I was not so keen on him anymore, I have to admit. Which is odd, because I think he has to live on the Gold Coast to be the team manager of the V8 Supercar, the team manager of the Dick Johnson team.
It would too. The factory's down the road from the street circuit, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's It's in that kind of northern Gold Coast area.
It's conveniently how they managed to rebuild. Was it Crazy Fabe? Was it his car that Garth Tander tried to pitch into the crowd at a billion mile an hour?
Well, that's probably the biggest. I mean, the biggest moment of the year, because one of the things we're going to talk about is the biggest moments of the year, and the biggest moment of the year was sort of the two fortnights of massive stacks ons, the huge pile up at sort of a 15 minutes from the end of Bathurst, where Garth Tander was almightily wronged, and those HRT fans were braying on the internet. 2 weeks later, he's stuffing Fabian Coulthard into a fence for no apparent reason that anyone could see. It's you know, someday you're the bug, someday you're the windshield.
Yeah, he really must have got angry after Bathurst, because that whole incident was entirely Two Girls' fault from go to woe.
Mm. Oh, it was, and the funny thing. So
for those of you that don't remember, Two Girls was having a fight with Scotty McLaughlin.
Scotty McLaughlin. He was right on Scotty McLaughlin's bumper.
He threw it down the inside into the left-hander at the chase in what can only be fairly described as an optimistic.
It was the height of vainglorious ambition, as Bill Tuckey would have called it.
Lunge, and Jandals obviously went off as contact was made. And in the process of trying to redress to let Jandals back in front, Two Girls threw the anchors out about 20 metres further down the road.
Hit the throttle at any point coming out of the right-hander.
Watch the replay. He pulls that car up something fierce.
Ooh.
So he throws the anchors out to let Jandals rejoin, either not knowing or not caring that Garth Tander was about to become the third party in this little incident. So Tander's decided he's going to go for it.
Third man in always gets the penalty, though. We know this from the rugby league.
But as he sort of, as Tander goes to go for it down driver's right, Jandals re-enters the scene in a haphazard sort of manner, and it all went tits up very quickly.
Basically, nobody thought about Garth. Nobody thought about Garth's feelings at any stage.
Poor Garth.
And that's when he resolved to get his revenge on everyone, starting with Fabian Coulthard, just because he's got a stupid haircut. And also because he had a job for next year and Garth didn't. I have to say that firing Garth Tander was the best thing that ever happened to his career, because suddenly he was...
everywhere.
Fast everywhere. And I reckon if GRM, Gary Rogers' team, have a car of any description to run next year, because of course they're trying to argue in court that Volvo should give them back the cars that they've kind of essentially confiscated off them when they've
pulled the funny bit about that story is Volvo, wherever they got the engines from, the company that made the engines owns the engines.
Mm.
But GRM reckons they own the chassis and the rest of the car, basically, because...
Who owns the IP, though?
Of something. Well, that's their argument, is that Volvo can't own it because it's all built under the car of the future.
There's no inventive step there. There's no...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because I presume the chassis was built by GRM.
Well, I presume it was just a friggin' car of the future chassis with some Volvo bits bolted onto it.
It's
60 bits that had been hammered to fit, because I think it's a bit like NASCAR. If you actually line it up next to a real version, it bears no resemblance because the thing's all been stretched and bloated and pivoted and hammered to actually make it fit the template. But
here's a fun fact that I learnt during the week. Which car on the V8 supercar grid do you think has the least amount of work done to transform it from the supercar from the road car to the supercar version in terms of the bodywork?
I would have said the Holden, but I'm guessing that's not the case.
It's the Nissan.
How is that the case?
I don't know.
Is it just because of where the wheels fall, or...?
Yeah, basically, all they had to do was do something with the wheel fairings, and that's pretty much it. The rest of it is actual, basically, straight off an Altima.
But the funny thing is, if you see an Altima parked in the street, it looks like a piece of shit. It's just an odd, weird, bloated device. And I imagine nobody's buying. So no wonder with the Generation 3 rules, they're talking about you know, letting them run two-door coupes. And Nissan can't wait to get shot of the Ultima and jump into a GTR, sell something, you know, to align it with their GT3 and all those other programs, and even their Super GT program, I suppose. Although, if you've seen the Super GT, Nissan GTR, it looks not a lot like anything that Nissan sell. It's just a sort of weird sports sedan, effectively.
Did you watch the Nismo Festival last weekend?
I haven't yet. I've got a flight coming up on Monday, and I've got the thing. I've ripped the video to watch on the plane.
Skip through it. Skip to the Grand Prix race at the end, and try and understand anything that happened in it.
So this is like Nissan's end of year party where they got all their various racing series to bring all their cars together. And I think at the end of the event, they ran basically an all comers race with various series. Was it a handicap race or was
no?
It was just. So they had these.
It was just a rolling start, which was weird. Not any like any rolling start you would have ever seen in any other racing series anywhere in the world. And then there were pit stops, maybe sort of, if you could swap drivers or not, or you could pit or not. It had no rules, and there were things.
This is something that someone thought up on the day. Yeah.
It seems like it. And the cars on the grid ranged from sort of the GT500s from Super GT, so the batshit insane things.
That's become one of my favourite forms of motorsport. All the way down to,
I'm pretty sure there might have been some old Datsun running around at the back of the field. So you can just imagine how that panned out at Fuji.
My nan's old fucking Datsun 180B from 1976 with the vinyl roof lining and the metal sunshade. Just giving it a three on the tree down the
14-kilometer main straight at Fuji,
pinging off the rev limiter. Metal sunshades creating lift at the front end, so it ends up sort of doing a wheelie down the straight. I have to say, Super GT has become one of my favourite forms of motorsport. I mean, it's really well covered by the Radio Le Mans team, partly because they don't use Hindhoff because Hindhoff's a fucking knob these days. They use Oh, mate, Sam Collins from Race Car Engineering, who knows his shit. He's really quite sharp.
Yeah, well, he also did the commentary on this Nismo Festival race, and there is a line in there about 15 minutes into the race where he's just like, I have no idea what's going on anymore.
Oh, fuck. No, he's good value, Sam Collins.
It's him and the other one.
One of them, Johnny Palmer or Bruce.
Johnny Palmer, that's the one.
Who doesn't look anything like Jonathan Palmer, the kind of
Dr. Jonathan Palmer,
the red-faced owner of racing tracks and father of Formula One drivers.
Former Formula One driver himself, I believe.
He was. He won the – well, he only won one thing, I think. It was the – they had like a subclass for the – when they brought back naturally aspirated engines in like 87, they had like a subclass for the people running the Cosworth V8s, and he won that title. Even though
he won a class victory, good on him.
Basically, yeah, he was basically the equivalent of the Toyota Corollas in the late 80s at Bathurst.
You won your class. How many cars are in the class? One. Right. Okay. Yes. Good. Good on you. You tried.
It's the Bathurst 12-hour. Turned up in a Mark car. There's something that's been built in the shed somewhere.
Oh man, there are
those things are
12 cool. of 12 of those on the grid next year. There Shit. Is a ton of them.
They seem to be sticking with the Ford Focus Mazda 3 look, which is probably not a bad idea because it's not a bad looking car.
Yeah, there's a Focus, there's a Mazda 3, and there was something else. I just remember looking at it going, it's basically there's 35 or 38 GT3 cars, and then a ton of these spectacular Mark V8s.
No, it's a good plan for cheap endurance racing.
It is. I just love the idea of a V8 Ford Fiesta. I think it's a Fiesta. It's not even a Focus. I think it's a V8 rear-wheel drive Ford Fiesta, which is just
quite mad.
That gets me excited.
It's almost stupid enough to make sense.
And then there's the Daytona that killed Brocky and
did they wipe it?
And something else. I presume it's a Daytona that killed Brocky. I'm pretty sure they only even built one.
Just hammered it out. Hosed it out. unbolted the energy polarizer since that didn't work particularly well. Don't tell me it's too soon. It's been 2 years. Fuck off. You know, just to finish that point about Super GT, I mean, it's amazing to think that Super GT and the DTM effectively run the same technical platform. I mean, the Super GT have got turbo motors and they've got more power, and they've got a tyre war, so they're much quicker. But it's more about just the way they go about their racing. I mean, the Germans are very... They basically treat the whole thing like it's cycling. The Audi, BMW, and Mercedes, in particular Mercedes teams, don't race as individuals or even as, you know, two-car teams. They effectively race as these eight strong phalanxes. And it's actually really boring seeing team orders being inflicted in the second round of the year. Like the Mercedes guys shuffling the order so that the guy they think is going to win. Like Pascal Wehrlein when he was racing for them last year. Part of the reason I've got very little respect for Wehrlein was when he won his title, he basically had it, was spoon-fed to him by Mercedes by, you know, rejigging the order in races to make sure he got maximum points all the way through. Whereas in Super GT, remember I was watching Sugo this year, and the Toyota teams were just hacking fucking lumps out of each other. The Nissan teams had won the first couple of rounds, and Toyota were looking like they were going to win this race in Sugo. And you'd think, oh, well, the Toyota would send out the order, come the fuck down and just have the Lexus teams come home as is. No fucking way. They were just hacking lumps out of each other. And that's the kind of thing that I like to see for my motorsport dollar, given that I didn't spend any money watching it.
Yeah, I need desperately to watch more Super GT. I watched a race and a half or something this year, and it's really good.
Yeah, it is. It's
and they race at some mad places.
Yeah, I recommend. I think the best race of the year was Sugo. So that was about round 3 or 4, I think.
I'll have to go back and have a look at it.
It was round 4. It was the third round race of the year because they lost one because of an earthquake. So
as you do.
Well, and the problem is that it wrecked one of the really cool tracks, Autopolis, which was that track that they built in the
80s. Is that the one out in the forest near nothing?
Yeah, it's one of the ones. They've got a couple of those where they've taken the top of a fucking mountain and built a track around it. So there's a bit of that. But Autopolis was one that was going to host the Japanese Grand Prix in the late 80s, early 90s. But they, of course, they went broke because Japanese real estate went ass up, I think. The same thing that brought down Leighton House, the people who owned March, the March Formula One team. Of course, being massively corrupt also contributed to that.
Yes.
Yes,
that'll do that.
So Super GT will probably get a bit more attention next year with Jenson Button potentially peddling one of them.
You got to think he's going to go there, right?
Well, I think once he's driven one. I mean, they've got the pace. I mean, they've often said this on the telecast. They've got the pace of like an LMP1 privateer Le Mans sports car, which is seriously quick. I mean, horrifically quick.
The privateers aren't as quick as anywhere near as quick as the hybrids, but still, yeah.
Well, the hybrids are nuclear weapons. They're terrifying.
They're, yeah, something else. The other, you know, you look at cars that like bend physics and they're those.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, and WEC is probably a good place to go to next. I mean, two of the biggest, my most memorable moments of the year, of this year, probably came out of WEC, World Endurance Championship, folks, for international listeners. Toyota losing the Le Mans 24 hour with 5 minutes to go was the sort of thing that you
would... It wasn't even 5 minutes. It was the start of the last lap.
Yeah, the thing started packing up on it was, I think was it Nakajima who was at the wheel at the time?
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it was Nakajima. It started packing up at about Arnage.
Yeah.
On the penultimate lap, and then it just died.
Yeah.
On the start finish straight. Right out the front of the Toyota car.
It basically beached itself like a fucking pilot whale. It just kind of flopped, flailed, and just out of reach of the mechanics are leaning over the wall and they just can't quite touch it. It was like, I've never seen Le Mans be as stabby as that. That was fucking cruel. I mean, I've heard of stories of it doing that, but I've never seen that before. That's
the most gut-wrenching end to a race that I've watched in a long time.
But the thing about WEC what I like about it is the way that the teams go about their racing, and the fact that Mark Webber and Porsche and Audi were down the fucking Toyota garages immediately giving people hugs and patting people on the back saying, you know, you get them next time. And you don't expect that. You certainly wouldn't see that in Formula One.
No. I
mean, there was that great moment when Felipe Massa stacked it and walked back through the pit lane and everyone's applauding him. But that's because they knew they were, they'd finally gotten rid of him. Or had they?
Hey.
We might come to that later. But the other big moment in the WC, which I thought was, and it's the same kind of thing, was when Audi, was the end of Audi's last race, and they've won their last race, and the whole team's walking down the pit lane, and there's a basically this huge guard of honour, and they're getting cheered and all the rest of it, and Wolfgang Ulrich is limping down the pit lane with his, you know, with his tears streaming out of his face, because, you know, he knows it's the end and all these, everyone loves him. Audi mechanics are kind of this big, all this scrum behind him, and they're handing out beers to the opposition teams, and it was just a lovely moment, just a thing that reminds you that well, what sport, I mean, even though these are teams with budgets of $250 million, too much for Audi, as it turned out, because of all those...
A couple of blokes in the diesel engine department. A
couple of bastards who thought they'd... And, you know, probably just doing...
Are you listening, guys? You ruined everything.
You fucked it. You fucked it for everyone. I would go and race your fucking Formula E. See how you go there. With your off-your-shelf parts bought from fucking J-Car. That was one of my favourite moments of the year was the immediate aftermath of that final race in Bahrain with the Audi mechanics, you know, pulling out cans of Becks and handing them out to anybody who gave them a hug as they walked up the pit lane. Just a lovely moment.
It is nice. Like, that paddock seems like it would just be a really fun place to be.
Well, I reckon...
Like, to travel around with.
Yes, yeah. Well, Weber said that. He said that you know, it was just like night and day. It was like going back to the 70s, he imagined, in Formula One, where people actually like each other's company and go out drinking together and all the rest of it.
Yeah. So he's retired as well now.
Yeah, he quietly ducked out in that same race. So
I'm not surprised. He won his world championship. That was what he wanted, and he's got one.
And now he can go home.
And a bit like a certain former Mercedes driver.
Yeah, this is true as well. I'll certainly get to him. But Webber gets replaced by yet another fucking Kiwi. New Zealand seems to be taking over motorsport. I was just doing the maths, and so now there's two Kiwis in the lead, or what is traditionally the lead Porsche, although with Andre Lotter in the other one, it's going to be quite lead as well. And with Scott Dixon in IndyCars and Nick Cassidy in Super GT, and we almost count Tom Blomqvist in DTM because he grew up in New Zealand, so he's basically a Kiwi.
No, that can't. That can't. So New Zealand has more racing drivers per capita than any other country on the planet.
It certainly seems to be the number two sport here over here now, which is kind of cool. Probably because the cricket team are a bit shit.
What do you even race over there? You have the Toyota thing.
There's basically a V8 supercar type thing.
What was the support at Pukekohe? Was it like SsangYong Utes or something?
SsangYong Utes. The Toyota 86 thing started over here before it went over to Australia. Of course, they do V8 Utes over here. The big thing is, and of course, they have two rounds of the Australian GTs. Tony Quinn's two circuits now. Highlands and Hampton Downs.
Hampton Downs,
But they also have that kind of spiritual successor to the Tasman series they run in January, which is basically running a Formula 3 or a GP3 like series on five consecutive weekends for and they get all the young stars from America and Europe come over and do it.
Okay, that sounds cool.
So the Toyota Racing Series is what that is, and that's
oh, that's that, right, okay.
Yeah, so
I've heard of this.
Lance Stroll won it year before last, I think, and he was obviously good. And that's just why it's a little bit rough on Lance, because he's this young Canadian dude whose old man happens to be, you know, richer than pig shit. So he is going to be racing in Formula One for Williams next year as part of this whole cascading thing that was started by Massa retiring, or whether Massa retired because he wasn't going to have a job. Well, this is the thing, is it not? Because our friend Nico decided decided to fuck right off after he'd won the title in one of the greatest "screw you guys, I'm going home" moments of all time. Of all time,
he just left the lit bag of dog shit on the front of the Mercedes HQ and just bolted off into the sunset.
And he knew how it would piss Lewis off because Lewis can't deal with ever losing to Nico, and he knows that Nick doesn't matter how many. And Lewis was salty as fuck. He was so pathetic about it when Nico retired, and he said, "Of course he's retired. It's the first time he's won in 18 years. That doesn't make you look cheap, does it?" But he knows he'll never get a chance to shoot back, which is knowing your enemy and just tweaking him on the way out. See you, buddy. Have a nice life.
I didn't have a lot of, like, I just couldn't care less about Nico Rosberg. Just generally, he's just one of those people that is just deeply uninteresting, but not so much in that you hate him. It's just like he's just sort of like there,
yeah,
and just go, "Oh yeah, Nico Rosberg, cool." When he dropped the steaming turd, suddenly you're turning around going, "Yeah, good on you.
Nice one, fella. Nice one."
Nice one.
Oh, I really like that.
Well played. You have just beautiful.
Because Lewis must be just an insufferable cock to have to work with. He must be just the fucking worst.
Everyone has that guy at the office.
Unfortunately... You know, and I are that guy, and that's why no one talks to us.
You know that guy in your office?
I am that
that's
guy.
That's Lewis. That one guy that seems to be everywhere and does everything, but no one can fucking stand him. And yet somehow he's the most popular person. That's Lewis.
Yes. It's funny how they didn't punish him for... And the thing is, it was a little bit HR-y the way that whole thing went down, because Lewis was looking like he was going to get somewhere punished for the way he carried on in the final Grand Prix. Not so much for what he did, but for the fact that he didn't stop doing it when his bosses told him to, which was more, it became more like a HR problem than an actual sporting conduct issue.
You know what it reminded me of? Lewis at McLaren with Fernando. Like,
yeah.
It's like Mercedes didn't look at that and go, "Oh, we can learn some things from this. Yes, this is good information to be paying attention to, so we will process that and see how McLaren didn't do it."
Well, yeah, the problem is...
We will change our approach to make everything nice and harmonious and, shit, it's gone bad.
Well, the thing with that situation with Lewis and Fernando was that the reason that blew up worse was because Fernando's reaction to it was so much larger than what Lewis had done that it became a mega issue, with the fact that Fernando basically parked him in... didn't he park him in pit lane
Hungary.
Qualifying? Yeah.
No, it was during the race, wasn't it? Fernando came in for a pit stop and they did the pit stop and he didn't move. He just sat in the pit box until Lewis turned up. Left it for a couple of seconds and then took off again.
That definitely happened. I just can't remember whether it was in qualifying or whether it was in the race. I thought it was.
I'm pretty sure it was in the race.
Yeah, God, it was a mess, because it was shortly after that that the whole Spygate thing broke. And then it all went to shit. Some dickhead photocopy. It's because his wife had tried. The wife of the dude from McLaren was down the local Kinko's, and had left the thing on the photocopier or something. Just unbelievably stupid. There's no way you could be stupid enough. Look up the Spygate scandal in Formula One, folks, because that was...
And then be prepared to be bored shitless by it.
Yes. People, that's always, you know, when people always talk about great, you know, these great conspiracies that underpin politics, you just remember how fucking stupid people are and how most of the things that look like conspiracies can be explained by people just being fucking stupid. Ask in this podcast.
Yes.
You're not meant to agree with that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud?
One thing that I'm going to chuck in the show notes, that because you probably saw this this week, was Formula One's been getting a lot of heat for the fact that for the perception that they're shit at social media and they're shit at online. I feel like they've really put a lot more effort into that, not just the teams who are often, you know, bantering away at each other on pit lane, but the actual Formula One people themselves. They did a fantastic 8-bit video game review of the year. Did you see this?
I did not.
Oh, it's tremendous.
I presume it's just on the Formula One website.
Yes, it was. It's on their YouTube, and they were sharing it on Twitter, and we'll see if we can see it in the show notes. I don't know whether it's been better or not, but it was basically just a review of the year done as though it was like a shitty Super Nintendo game. And just the little jokes that they find in there were just totally not what you'd expect for a massive corporate sport.
Yeah, it's taken F1 a long time, but they're finally starting to get it.
Mm.
Slowly, little bits and pieces, like their app is still largely a heaving pile of garbage, but if you want live timing, it's basically the only way to fucking get it, which is annoying. Which is annoying, Bernie.
Yeah, but are we talking to you or are we talking to the other Bernie? The other Bernie has never
done the old one.
The other one wouldn't know a podcast from a fucking...
No.
I think it's another podcast. My metaphors are not going that well.
He wouldn't know a podcast from the old Movie Tone News new movie reel.
the pathé. Here's
Nico Rosberg crossing the line to take the checkered flag. Good on him. Yes. He's world champion now.
Yes. And he's decided to fuck off home. Having successfully defeated the Lewis Darkie. Hamilton.
He's not looking very happy, is he?
Yes. There would have been lots of casual racism, I expect. That stuff. I don't
think it would have been that casual.
Yes. Lewis Hamilton finished second because he's inferior. Because he's a darkie. Anyway, move on from that. That was obviously done with ironic distance, in case people are going to quote that out of context. 2017 rules, quickly. Quickly is the
bigger wings, bigger wheels.
Bigger wings, bigger wheels. Pointless, or is this actually a thing that's going to be any good? Again, it's a horse designed by committee, which ends up looking like a camel. Is this going to be any good, or do you think it's going to be a complete fucking schmozzle as usual?
I don't think it's going to make any difference at all. It's going to be pointless.
Yeah. I mean,
I've said for a while what they need to do, because the problem with modern Formula One car is you can't run them nose to tail because they're so dependent on running in clean air for all the aerodynamics to work, and mechanical grip is basically a thing that doesn't exist in Formula One anymore.
Well, because they run on these pillow tyres that are kind of skittering across the surface anyway. If you watch these slow motion shots of them going through a chicane, there's... The contact patch is often going and coming and going and coming anyway. There's so many things that they could do that it's not this to improve the show.
But, well, and the one idea is, and this was someone else's idea, and I'm just going to claim it, is really simple: standard front wing. You give them a standard front wing that bollocks up all the aero over the car. And forces the guys to design cars that have mechanical grip and watch the racing get better.
Yeah, I was wondering about stuff like that, because whenever an idea like that gets thought up and is kind of received wisdom, if you like, what happens is Pat Simmons goes on the Motorsport Magazine podcast and explains why that doesn't actually work. And unfortunately, he seems to be right. Because, I mean, if you take away a lot of the aero, what happens is the cars become, in an odd kind of way, more aero-sensitive because there's... so little margin between not having any aero at all and the margin of the aero that you're getting. So I'm not sure that... I always thought that, you know, what if you had like a single element front and rear wing? Like you could have, instead of having all these kicks and flips and fucking...
Let's get back to the ironing boards.
Just one plate. You can have one. You can do whatever you like with it, but you got one. It's got a continuum. And nice and clean and flat so you can actually write your sponsors' names on it. Because that was the main reason Bernie never wanted to get rid of wings once they'd come in. Because you could write Marlboro in big fuck-off letters across the back of it. I always thought that was a way to do it. But the way it was explained to me by a man on a podcast, it's a little bit more complicated than that, which is disappointing. I hate things that are complicated.
Why can't it be simple?
Well, you know, I mean, we look at, I mean,
he's, I mean, why don't we just basically give them a Formula Ford chassis and tell them to put their hybrid engine in that and see what happens?
Well, why not?
What could possibly go wrong? It would be interesting until they got to the first corner.
Well, they need to be able to generate something a bit like what MotoGP did this year. That's a seamless segue. Because this year they gave them all standardized electronics and they stuck them on a different brand of tyre. And they had like 27 different winners. I think it was something like 10. 9 or 10, which was a record. And the racing was tremendous and all kinds of weird shit happened. And by next year, all the factories will have figured out the new tyres and the factory in the
And it'll go back to the way it was. Yes,
it'll go back to being Honda v Yamaha with Ducati trying to struggle along. Although with Jorge Lorenzo, they might be able to do a bit better. Having said that, we thought about that. Thought that was going to be the case with Rossi.
As with MotoGP, the only race I'll actually watch will be Mugello because it's just fantastic.
Yeah, it's cool. Oh, Phillip Island's always a good race too. So, but no, I tend to watch a lot. I tend to watch the Moto 3.
Moto 3 is tremendous fun. Yeah. So that's 30-odd 16-year-olds who are invincible teenage boys riding, what are they, 250s or something now?
The 250 single. Basically a motocross engine.
Yeah. And they just do not care. They will go 7 wide into every corner, and it is great fun.
Well, the thing, every race, you know, they'll line up at the start of the race, and there'll be all these. They have like a track, a ticker that runs along the bottom that tells you what's going on, and there'll be just be like riders X, Y, Z have all been sent to the back of the grid for infringements in qualifying because they hacked each other up in qualifying. They were trying to pull drafts and that sort of stuff. So this stuff just goes on from fucking free practice onwards. They've got no idea what they're doing, and it's hilarious. One place, there was like 9 of them that all got relegated to the back of the grid because of fucking about in qualifying.
Was it like Mercedes with their F1 engines a couple of years ago, where they're just amassing, you know, like 47 place grid penalties?
I wanted to see that actually, because Lewis did that at Spa this year. He just went, well, I need a new engine. I've got to go to the back of the grid. I'll just take a new everything, and I'll have like 55 grid places.
Yeah, and what he actually did was when the rest of the Formula One circus was starting at Spa, he was actually starting the Italian Grand Prix from last week.
I was going to say, he was outside Brussels train station, looking very confused.
He was driving around Monza, making up his time.
So that's a system that doesn't work very well. Speaking of things that don't work very well, world rallying has been in a pretty grim place. It's also trying to rediscover itself. We've got new rules for 2017. Another series with a fast Kiwi in it and no fast Aussies. I don't know what's going on with whether being so many Kiwis is...
you're not pushing the Australians out of WRC.
Well, there aren't that many. What was the last one to be in there? Chris Atkinson? There isn't...
Possibly.
There isn't a... I'm a little concerned by the lack of Australians doing it on the big stage internationally, I have to say. It used to be a thing that we did, and we don't seem to be doing it as much anymore. And I don't know whether that's because everyone just wants to be a V8 supercar driver and have a comfortable existence, or whether
probably that one. I mean, how is there money in rallying? Because it's impossible to make TV coverage interesting.
Well, yeah, that's actually a thing.
You go out into the forest and a car blasts past you once every 30 seconds.
Well, their big challenge, of course, has become because Red Bull took over as the promoter this year. And Red Bull do...
That was a couple of years ago. They've been promoted for a while now.
Yeah, you're actually right. Yeah, it was a couple of years ago. And you can see the uptick in some of the...
changed.
Some of the production values certainly ticked up, but they used the same people, so... That didn't change much. But the biggest problem is that compared to something like Rallycross, where it all happens on a track in front of you and you've got that thing that people want to see, which is people battling head to head, it's a real challenge. Now they've got a good product. They certainly will next year even though Volkswagen have pulled out. You've got Ogier, who's probably the quickest of all, in what won't be the quickest car because it's basically a privately built Ford Fiesta. You've got the new Toyotas, you've got the Hyundais, you've got all the rest of it. But how are they actually going to get any traction? And I saw there that Red Bull are actually going to move the live content off this WRC Plus platform that nobody would watch onto Red Bull TV, which is does very good coverage of very niche sports. And I'm wondering if that's where...
Does
that's
it? Where because the last time I watched Red Bull TV was for Pikes Peak.
Mm.
I think it might have been last year. And it was not good.
Not good?
I'll be watching. They possibly might have been dudded by the weather a little bit in terms of getting a helicopter up the top of the hill. But they just had two guys at a desk down the bottom near the start line who just prattled on about nothing of interest.
Oh, that's a shame.
And you sort of watch your car start and disappear off, and you'd sort of get three or four cameras a couple hundred yards down the road, and then they'd just vanish. And you wouldn't hear what happened to them, so whether they...
whether far they off just, crashing noise.
smoke just in the distance.
Yeah. Well, Pikes Peak was ruined when they tarmacked the whole thing, but, I mean... They do a good job of things like... I know the mountain bikes. My regular co-host Bezo is mad on the crankworks and the riding bikes off hills for no apparent reason other than to try and dismantle your testicles on the bike seat.
They're a very good way of removing your collarbone from where it's supposed to be.
Yes, it's almost as good as riding MotoGP bikes. I'll be interested to see what it is. I mean, I'll probably watch because I'm just that sort of motorsport nerd. I'll fucking watch anything.
Oh, yeah. I'll give it a little bit. Like, live coverage of rallying, it's really hard to make that interesting. Like, the only thing you can sort of do is kind of like those the super special stadium stages things. They do one at Coffs Harbour now as part of Rally Australia. They did one out at when it was out at Perth at like a dog track or something.
Oh yeah, they did it on the show. It was something on the harbour front. It was kind of this park on the harbour front. And then of course they had the special stage out, the Bunnings stage, which Colin McRae always used to try and launch his Subaru into outer space.
The Bunnings stage, is that where you go around a Bunnings store and you have to buy a hammer and
Before Bunnings was a thing in nationwide. It was Bunnings because Bunnings was the company that owned the forestry plantation. That was before they diversified into hardware stores. So this is like 20 years ago, late 90s. Bunnings was just a forestry corporation. And then they also owned hardware stores in WA, and then they started doing these big warehouse things. They bought BBC Hardware. And how do we get into the history of hardware in Australia?
Good evening and welcome to the Australian Hardware Store. Yeah.
Did you know that Mitre 10 was called Mitre 10 because it was formed by 10 blokes who met at the Mitre Tavern in Melbourne and got pissed?
I did not, but now I do.
I know that too. That's my two bits of knowledge about Australian hardware. Oh, and that Masters thing was doomed from the start. There's three. So I think that's about all we wanted to talk about on the motorsport show. Were there any moments that you thought of across the year that engaged with your brain and made you think, this is something cool? I think I'll share that with the people.
There was only one really, really funny one, which was the hailstorm during the Nürburgring 24-hour. So if you don't know the Nürburgring, it's this phenomenal racetrack out in...
It's like Bathurst with gigantism.
Out in West Germany. It's like Bathurst, but scaled up about four times. It's 17 miles or something like that. There's 150-odd...
26K.
26K.
26K and, with the Grand Prix loop, I think.
And 170 or something corners. But it basically... It's like the Super GT tracks we were talking about before. It basically runs around and over and mountains in Germany.
Yeah.
And
it's
about
like a scenic drive between a couple of villages.
Yes. And about 3 or 4 hours into the race, this almighty thunderstorm arrived. So much so that they threw the red flag, and instead of all the cars proceeding back to like the start-finish line or pit lane like you would expect normally, they just got stuck out on the circuit, out in the forest.
It was like winter. It was like those shots of Wintermageddon in North America where people are stuck on the motorway because they've had some blizzard. Basically, these cars littered around the fucking Nordschleife because there was footage from like one quarter where everyone had been caught out. It was like there's a sort of a straight, and then they come into a sort of a second gear
right-hander. I think it was down towards the foxhole where it sort of dives downhill and there's a big, it's sort of like cut into the side of the hill and all the water was rushing down from the top of the hill across the circuit and continuing on its way. So you just arrived around this corner and there was just a river.
Yeah, it was a lake.
And there was no way any racing car was ever going to get across it. So they just all had to park up and ride out the hailstorm in their racing cars.
Did you see the part where they actually where the first people discovered this? It was just sort of one went off and then another one went off and then one coming over the hill saw this, stuffed the brakes on and went off anyway. And then the next one came over the hill and he went off. And then the next one came over the hill with yellow flags and they went, oh, okay, I'll go to the inside, and ended up in a bigger puddle and he went off. And there was this fucking car park in the sand trap by the end of this. It was basically like that scene in Blues Brothers. Where they're in the
Chicago with the police chase. With the
cops, and they're just piling into each other, one after another. Basically, it was all it needed was some Illinois Nazis, and it would have been just perfect.
That was a beautiful moment. That was just about my motorsport highlight of the year. That and when featuring rain, when it rained as they were on the grid for the second race of the Clipsal 500. In Adelaide for the supercars.
Oh, nobody.
And it very quickly dawned on the race organisers that they don't have an aborted start or red flag procedure, so they just made one up.
Oh, and this was also the one where Nick Percat made up, like, just had a crack at making up some new rules and happened to win the race.
Yeah, that was the one where no one really sort of knew what was going on or what they were going to do, because what had happened was they were all out on the grid and they'd sort of done the formation lap. And then the heavens opened, so they were all out there on slick tires.
Which would have been good. I mean, that would have been
If you know your physics, slick tires, wet road, street circuit.
Suboptimal.
Not great. So supercars went, oh shit, we can't start the race like this. And then went, oh shit, how do we stop the race? And then went, oh shit, we can't stop the race. So we'll start the race we'll get the safety car so I think they got the medical car from the back of the grid because, you know, every motor race starts with a medical car that chases the field around the first lap. I think they basically got it and the safety car to drive through the grid while all the cars are still sitting there. And then they started the race.
We're off. You guys follow.
And then they started the race behind the safety car. It was just bizarre.
It was a weird day.
But this is one of the problems I have with the V8 supercars is that this is our premier series, and you end up with these situations which are entirely predictable. In which case, where they discover that they actually haven't written any rules. Like, how do you not have an aborted start procedure?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it should have been. It should have been,
Well, at least it's never rained in Adelaide before. It's not like a problem that's ever come up before. They've never had, I mean, no series has ever had to stop a race in Adelaide because of rain before.
Or anywhere else.
Oh, wait.
You come around, you form up the grid and it starts raining. You go, oh, shit, okay, well, aborted start. Everyone back into the pit lane, put your wet tyres on and we'll go again. Like, that's what it should have been.
That's like every second week in MotoGP. They have to do that. So it's, yeah. Shambolic. It's almost as though, you know, it's the same people are coming up with ideas like running a racetrack around goat tracks around the headland of Newcastle.
Yeah. It's those things where you sort of go, do these people actually know what they're doing? And then you look at things, you sort of sit these really fundamental mistakes that they're making next to, oh, let's overhaul the rules to include turbocharged engines and two-door coupes and all this other stuff that's happening next year that's not happening next year. It's all going to be V8 sedans, exactly the same as it is now.
It's going to be the V8 in parentheses supercars because they'll all still be V8s. Because I remember seeing stories on overseas papers and like, the V8 supercars are dead. They're going to take all the V8s. I'm like, nah. Nah, they're not.
No, they're not. They're not. They're
really not.
So you have these two things and you go, well, do I actually trust you to be able to make these rule changes and implement these rule changes and continue to build your series when the actual basic mechanics of running a motor race are something that seem to escape you on a fairly regular basis?
Yes, and particularly the basis of expanding that racing series outside Australia.
Which is dumb. Which is just dumb, guys. You've done it before. No one cared when you went to Abu Dhabi. No one cared when you went to Bahrain. No one cared when you went to Shanghai. No, really no one cared about that fucking exhibition race in Kuala Lumpur. Stop doing it.
You left out Texas. They went to fucking Texas.
Oh, God.
What are they doing in fucking Texas?
I suppressed that memory so hard.
I know. Let's go to a country that's full of V8s that are racing. Why don't we? Maybe they'll be interested in our ones.
I don't understand why they keep thinking that anyone would give a shit about a little parochial Australian touring car series.
Because they believe their own fucking...
outside of the only place where this series actually works.
Yeah, well, they'd be better off having two races in New Zealand. I reckon they would. If they could find a second track in if they were smart,
they'd go to they'd have a round of Highlands.
Yeah, I don't think Highlands could deal with it because it's a bit boutique. It's not really built for. I think there's not enough pits and pits garages and things like that.
Yeah, mate. They race at Winton.
True. They do, and
Simmons Plains.
I think it's more the lack of corporate. I think that'd be the bigger problem.
You can truck that in. Go to Bunnings and put a tent up.
Yeah, it might piss off all the club members there. But it'd be tremendous. No one would ever pass anyone at Highlands because it is
It's a bit Mickey Mouse.
So Clark Quinn drew it on an iPad. I think he should have expanded it a bit so the straights were long enough to actually overtake. It's not a great raceable circuit. Having said that, they've finished the expanded Hampton Downs, and that's a pretty good track now. That's actually
I watched highlights of the was it 101
the 101, yeah, because they did a 101 there, and then 2 weeks later they did
Highlands. I watched some highlights of the Hampton Downs thing, and yeah, that place is interesting. That looks like a fun bit of road to drive around.
Yeah, it's not a bad little track. It's because originally they had a much shorter version, and then they went broke, and Tony Quinn came in and saved the day, which he seems to do quite a bit of with motorsport bits and pieces. I mean that would be another potential track that you could run. I think it would be up to spec to run V8 supercars. Problem is, it's only about 40 minutes down the road from Pukekohe, so kind of pointless, really.
Yeah, you'd need to a bit of geographical separation.
Yeah, you probably need.
Didn't they run a street race in Auckland for a while?
They talked about running a street race in Auckland. They used to run a street race in Wellington back in the 90s. Back in the 80s.
There was a street race in New Zealand in recent history.
And Hamilton. They raced
Hamilton.
Was because Pukekohe, because the Auckland Jockey Club, whoever owns Pukekohe horse racing track, weren't that keen to, you know, because they would have had to spend a lot of money to get the track up to spec to run V8 supercar. So they went to Hamilton. And then Hamilton, of course, like most V8 supercar street races, turned out to be economically unsustainable. Funny that. Never seen that story before. And
I love hearing the word, you know, a very large number, and then the words boost to the local economy. Because you
nebulous
just
money.
You just know what you've done is you've walked up to a random number generator, you've hit go, and then you've kept hitting it until you got a number that you kind of liked and went, yeah, that looks like a good one. People will get behind me if I say that number.
But I mean, they're moving the same people who are moving the race out of Homebush because it's not economic are supporting the race in the same state government.
Tourism New South Wales is the same. Well, and they've got buy-in from Newcastle Council as well, which Novocastrians all know is an always upstanding political institution. It is
no history of problems there.
It is absolutely not at all a clown car.
Maybe they should have a clown car celebrity race. Put all the council members in it.
Oh man, bring back the celebrity race.
Yeah, I think they can only stop it because of public liability insurance. Because there was that one year they had massive accidents.
Because Daryl Eathlake and Alan Jones tried to kill, I think it was the woman from Getaway.
Oh, that's right. She said, like, yeah, like, go inside
here. Goading her into basically just punting someone off the road,
bombing someone.
Massive accident over the radio because you could talk to the because of course you get airhead celebrities and put them in racing cars. What you really want is idiot TV commentators talking to them while they're trying to do this, because that's smart.
They don't even do that with V8 supercar drivers anymore, which is part of, you know. But
I believe they do for Bath. They do for the shootouts, but not during lap.
Yeah, only, and they do it under safety car, but not like back in the day. I mean, I was watching some, because they had that Bathurst channel the week before Bathurst this year, and watching like 1984 where. Literally, they're talking to Dick Johnson and Alan Grice while they're out trying to chase down Brocky at full race chat. It was just amazing that this was ever a thing that was deemed appropriate. I mean, these days we get annoyed when people go on a football field at halftime and ask out of breath footballers how they think they played, because we think that's a bit invasive and stupid. But you know, 30 years ago they were talking to V8 driver, or touring car drivers in the middle of the race. And they should bring that shit back, because it was awesome.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. It was also because people like Dick Johnson was exceptionally good at that. I can see why he got the following that he got, because he was really, really good. I won't say on camera personality, because he wasn't really on camera. You can see sort of the side of his helmet, but he was exceptionally good at that. And that's basically that very grassroots approach to building a profile is kind of what's missing in this current generation of, and it's hard to do these days, of course, with the way the sport is structured. But
it is really hard to do, and you're right. So many of the supercar drivers are just like, they're just interchangeable.
Yeah, Winterbottom, Winterbottom, and Wincup, and I mean Tim Slade. What's a Tim Slade? Oh, I've got no idea what a Tim Slade is or does. I think he's from Adelaide.
Deirdre. Andre Heimgartner.
He's a Kiwi, so we know he's just one of the interchangeable.
Kiwis. Oh, he's the Kiwi of the week, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Is it just a different Kiwi every race? But
they got one called Vanderdrift last time. That was interesting. Vanderdrift. I mean, he should be doing drifting. Surely he should be out with Mad Mike in the fucking RX-8.
You think so? Him and SVG should be out doing that.
It just synchronized drifting.
Go and do a bit of Formula D.
Which you love the D. They tried to build a drifting track in the fucking stadium here in Dunedin, because we've got this expensive roofed stadium that's costing us millions of dollars. It cost $100 million to build, that we're going to be paying off for the rest of time. But it looks pretty on television. They had a round of the New Zealand Drift Championship in the stadium.
Wow.
They just laid down...
like Racer Champion style.
Build
your infinity loop and off you go.
Pretty much. Yeah, I think it was just a superannuated figure of eight. But it was... you don't need much for a drift.
All you need is a corner for them to slide around.
Pretty much, you just need.
You don't need straight. No one wants to see a car drifting in a straight line.
No, but it doesn't stop them trying. Anyway, I think we've beaten this dead horse to death. Is there anything you want to plug? Do you want to?
You can follow me on Twitter at BernieTV.
Follow me on Twitter.
Don't do that.
Well, people who listen to this podcast are familiar with the quality of content that they get from the people who are on it.
I'm no better.
So
there's no improvement.
Bernie has terrible takes about all the sorts of things that Bezo and I have terrible takes about, particularly the other sporting varieties of cricket and so forth. So he has an entertaining follow, so I recommend you do that. Bezo and I will be back probably next week, if his internet works. We'll be wrapping up the year. Until then, folks, we'll catch you later. Thank you, Bernie.
Thank you very much, mate. It's been fun.
Awesome. Cheers, folks.